Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Welcome to a special afternoon edition of Nightlight. Hope everyone's having a great week. About 4 years ago, my friend Bruce Cunningham drew my attention to a new conference and asked if I could help with promoting it. That was the Global Pyramid Conference in the Chicago area. And by the next year, the producer, Marta Thomas, had enlisted Barbara for also, you know, helping out with promotions. So Barbara and I had been helping out with annual announcements about the uniqueness of pyramids from around the world. Our guest will be appearing via Skype at the conference and is one of the featured presenters. Michael Feely is our guest today, and he'll be giving us a sample of his presentation. He'll also be drawing a little bit of information from his book, Alchemy of the Gods. Let's see. If you heard Barbara and Solaris's discussion on Sunday, they spoke about the number of recent and upcoming shows on biblical themes. Seems that our listeners are intrepid seekers for the truth and are enjoying developing their spiritual lives. And they are not just, you know, content with listening to unproven sensational rants. So, you know, we really appreciate that aspect of the demographics from our listeners. Thank you. Michael is a former British police officer. He's the author of Alchemy of the Gods. And like I said, he'll be a presenter at the Global Pyramid Conference, which is scheduled for October 22nd through the 24th. You can learn more about Michael by going to his website, michael-feely, F-E-E-L-E-Y.com, or the globalpyramidnetwork.com. Hi, Michael. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Hello to you both, and thank you for the invite.
Oh, well, thanks for agreeing to be a guest better than hearing, no, I've heard about you. I'm not going to show up. So I appreciate your willingness to appear on Nightlight. So, but let's start. You're going to be talking, or you're going to be talking about, at the Global Pyramid Conference. Let's just kind of focus a little bit on your 2010 family trip to Egypt, and what you saw of the Great Pyramid. So when you get there, you have to go past the Sphinx. So let's talk about that approach to the Great Pyramid. What did you observe of the Giza Plateau?
Well, the mystery of the actual trip began probably about 10, 14 days before the actual trip. And my wife and I were deciding that we wanted to go on vacation. We both decided that we certainly had a feeling, shall we say, from the silent voice, aka intuition, that we needed to go to Egypt. But we also realized that it was more than just a vacation. There was a deeper meaning, although we didn't know what that was. We felt there was a deeper meaning for us being there. So mysteriously, probably about 10 to 14 days before we went on the trip, I had a strange email from a psychic medium from Scotland who I'd never met before, didn't know her, she didn't know me. And she just emailed out of the blue saying that she had a message from her spiritual counsel. And I have that message here now, and I shall read that verbatim. "You will help uncover more insights and translate ancient knowledge brought to us from great distance. Under the Sphinx lies an ancient secret knowledge that will be added to your toolbox. Use this wisely for the benefit of all meaning past, present and future. It belongs all together in the same place. You must absorb, accept, understand and finally know. Only then can you share and teach." She also said that I needed to get to the closest to the right-hand side of the Sphinx as possible. So that's where the mystery started, with this mysterious cryptic message of gathering ancient knowledge that will be added to my toolbox, etc., etc. And at that particular point, I'd never done any talks. I'd never done much in relation to speaking about these things. But nevertheless, we went on vacation. We'd booked trips before we got there. One of them, I think within the first couple of days, was an internal flight to Cairo in order to go in the desert with the Bedouin tribe, in order to go down the Nile, in order to go to the Cairo Museum, and of course, most prominently, to go to the site of the Great Pyramid in Giza. So what we were faced with was a couch trip through the crowded streets of Cairo, literally bumper to bumper, couldn't move, hot, humid. And all of a sudden I looked up and in between the high-story building line, I saw the pyramids. So we arrive there, we do different things, we go up this very, very narrow corridor, we get to the top of this narrow sort of corridor, and I look to my right and there's the Sphinx. Ironically, just as my wife and I get to the top of this ramp, this concrete ramp, two people move and it allows us to get to the closest part to the right-hand side of the Sphinx as possible, which is what we were told to do. So here's some synchronicities now already beginning to start.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at the Sphinx, we do this, and then we go inside the Great Pyramid and different things. And we spent the day in the area, then we went back to the airport, we caught the internal flight back to the hotel, and we wondered, what's this message all about? Because, when you get a cryptic message such as this, you expect there to be, fireworks and some obvious guide or something meeting you at the end. But that didn't apparently happen. So we continued, and we had a great day doing different things. And then, of course, the vacation finished, and we came back home to the UK. Now, 7 years later, that is when the message began to make sense, because I was receiving visitations from ancient Egypt that were coming forward in time to my space and time. I was getting strange things happening where I would see scarab beetles manifesting out of the wall of my house. And there's all of these cryptic things that were happening in terms of getting downloads of really, really secret ancient knowledge about the purpose of this site, what it really is, and how it's not as people have been taught. So what had happened during that vacation is something had been unlocked, some key had been presented, and something had been unlocked within me in order to prepare me for when this secret knowledge was going to come into my life. Now, bear in mind that many years ago, I had a trace of my family tree, and my family tree goes back all the way back through the Kings of Ireland, and it goes back to Queen Scotia of ancient Egypt. So I am a bloodline of Queen Scotia of Egypt. So this kind of knowledge, this kind of information is in my bloodline, and that is why you have the likes of royal families, etc., intermarrying, because they understand that knowledge gets passed from generation to generation through genetics, through blood. So there's a deep connection between me and Egypt. And then, of course, when you then bring into biblical things, the original Bible is actually the Giza Plateau, Noah's Ark, for argument's sake, is the Great Pyramid, and so on and so on. So initially, we went on the vacation in 2010. I had the cryptic message 10 to 14 days before we flew out. And all of the things that happened, I think, were opening doorways, opening in keys within, unlocking things to prepare me for visitations and for manifestations and a complete and utter deep download of ancient and secret knowledge, which is what happened subsequently.
Well, it sounds like it, and the what you said about the it's in your blood, DNA, connection to Egypt. I don't know if you can ever really deny that part of you if it's so ingrained.
Well, you can't, and what tends to happen is you will carry this kind of knowledge around with you, and often it will be in the background, it will be dormant, and at certain points throughout your life there will be triggers, and there will be the flame that sets off the firework, so to speak. And this information, even from the age of 7 and 8, I was having deep adult conversations with myself, talking about how the world didn't make sense. You know, when I was watching famous biblical films, such as the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston, I was asking myself the questions: could this really happen? You know, how can this happen? And I always felt misplaced on this planet. So I always had this deep feeling within, and you'll find that this kind of information that was inside me, but it was just dormant and waiting to come out at the right time. And when you look at the time capsule of knowledge, which is the Great Pyramid, which has been set on the waters of time in order to reappear and reemerge at a time when humanity can best deal with the information, that time is now. So there's always these catalysts for this dormant information, and when it awakens, you can't go back. You have to keep moving forward, because you can't undo what you've done, you can't unknow what you know, and you can't block out what's coming to you. So for me, 2009 was the time that I had the ignition for the firework. That was my major awakening, and everything that followed from that was really a more and more and more advanced introduction into the ancient world, what the ancients were telling us, how all of these ancient civilizations who we are told were individual entities. They were not. They were all one voice, one hymn, you know, one orchestra across the face of the earth, and that goes beyond the earth. So you can't undo what you know, and you have to keep moving forward.
And you know, we were talking about, you know, this is information inside of you. It's almost like you went into the Great Pyramid, but it's really a journey within yourself.
It is a journey within yourself, and when you look at what the great monuments, what the great monoliths, what the great sort of religious teachings at their correct level are telling us and were telling us, is predominantly about the self. Now, when you look at the word self, within the word self, you have El, which originally was God. So it is the God within you. You are the God self. So everything that they were trying to teach, everything that they were trying to tell us, relates back to the self. And it is the resurrection of self. It is the phoenix, the fire within you, the Christ within you, that you have to activate in order for that energy, that sacred energy, to reach the dome, which is the Golgotha, which is the place of skulls, which is the head, which is the temple of God. So everything really is about the self and how to transmute the self. And the ancients were, of course, doing that through knowledge. They were doing that through frequencies. They were doing that through certain initiation rituals. Now, for me, I've felt for a long time that I am being initiated. Now, I don't go to rituals, I don't go to Masonic temples, I don't go to anything at all, but I realize that the certain aspects of my life, particularly in recent times, that mirror initiation ceremonies. Now, initiation is really a soul level. So you are enlightening, you are awakening, you are educating the soul through certain practices, through certain life paths. And this, again, is another lesson that the ancients were teaching us in their grand monuments and monoliths. And in the conference, I will even go as deep as to tell the audience and the listeners who actually built the Great Pyramid. And it's not who or what you would think.
Okay. Well, since you just mentioned, you know, the building of the pyramid, your book, Alchemy of the Gods, you do give a profile. You know, talk about the subterranean aspect of the pyramid. Maybe a lot of people aren't aware of that or don't know much about it. I cover the Grand Gallery and the King's Chamber. If we could do like a cutaway profile look at the pyramid, Michael, could you give us descriptions of the interior features and how you interpret their functions for this enigmatic structure?
Yeah, of course. You have to really look at what these fantastic structures represent. And the fantastic structures not only represent enlightenment, hence, which is something that I found out when I did a map overlay of the human head over the Great Pyramid and discovered that the likes of the Kings and the Queen's Chamber, etc., correlated to the endocrine system of the brain in terms of the pineal gland, the pituitary gland, so that they were marking the seats of enlightenment within inside the human head. Now, when you start looking at what these grand monuments represent, they do represent enlightenment, but within the Giza Plateau itself, it also represents the 9 months of gestation of a newborn child. Now, in other words, it is the rebirth. So when you come from the cosmos, you have to come through the water gate, you have to come through the womb, you have to come through the Yoni, the Holy Grail. You have no choice. To come from the celestial to the terrestrial, you have to come through the gateway of God, which is the Holy Grail, the womb. And what I've found is that the nine pyramids represent the 9 months of gestation of a child. But that 9 months of gestation is in three trimesters of 3 months. And that is why we have nine pyramids in groups of three. Now, the three major pyramids, which align to Orion, which has its own sort of story, but the last, the larger of the three pyramids of Giza represent the third and final trimester. That is where medical science tells us that the consciousness comes into the child in the womb. So that is represented again by the consciousness, by the third trimester in the human head and the gestation period of the child. Now, what happens is, I just mentioned Orion and the importance of Orion, not only in Egypt but around the world. We have a silver gate and a golden gate within the heavens. Now, the silver gate is just above the arm of Orion, the constellation of Orion, the hunter. Now, the silver gate is where souls come into this reality. Now, if you imagine that the souls come in through the silver gate, which is aligned to in the Vatican City, in Jerusalem, in Damascus, and all of these places are aligned to this. But when you come through the silver gate, the soul comes into this reality. It comes through, or the symbolic, coming through the nine pyramids, which is symbolic of the 9 months of birth. You then come out the Sphinx of Egypt, which represents the womb, the yoni. And it is the yoni that is guarded by the lioness. That is why we have the likes of red lions and different things, because the lioness fiercely defends her cub. Now, when you look at what a lion cub is a Judah. So we have the tribe of Judah of the Bible, which is the Sphinx of Egypt. So we come through Orion, we come through the silver gate of Orion, we come through the 9 months of gestation, we come out of the Sphinx, which is the womb, into the matrix of the third dimension. And that is another one of the reasons and one of the meanings of the Giza Plateau, which I've never heard anybody else ever mention. So it's not through the Sphinx into the pyramids, as people believe, in terms of going through the secret chambers of the Sphinx of Egypt, the lion, through the pyramids into initiation. It's the other way around. When you come from Orion, through the 9 months, and out of the Sphinx of Egypt, which represents the womb, the Holy Grail. And in addition to that, of course, when for anybody who's familiar with the 64 keys of Enoch, the 64 keys of Enoch are actually harmonic keys. Now, the Giza Plateau rests upon an 8x8 grid. Now, if you times 8x8, you get 64. So that is the 64 keys of Enoch, which the Giza Plateau rests upon. They are harmonic keys. Now, when you reach the 64th note, and it can be 64 people with one note each, it could be 32 people with two notes, but when you reach the hemi-demi-semi-quaver, which is the 64th note, you open the Stargate. And a lot of these ancient monuments around the world, Stonehenge and different places, are Stargates that are opened by the voice. And also the tongue is also a key. And it, when I took a group on tour to the inner circle of Stonehenge, my co-host went into the center of Stonehenge in a trance. She didn't know she was going to do this, but she just went into the center of Stonehenge and began to make all of these different tonal rills with her tongue, with her voice. Now, I witnessed, as did the group, the power of sound, because that sound came from her voice. And it made the circle of Stonehenge sing. And the vibration was extremely powerful. Now, this is somebody who lives by me, who is a friend of me. If you can imagine that the masters of sound of the ancient past and the kind of power that they could have generated with their voice or voices in order to make these stone circles and these stones reverberate, they are Stargates. And for proof of that, in August 1971, five men were witnessed to disappear from the center of Stonehenge, never to be seen again, yet their campfire and their tent were still intact. And this was witnessed by a police officer, and it was witnessed by the public. Five men just disappeared and vanished from the center of Stonehenge in 1971. So these are Stargates, as well as representing coming into this matrix as a newborn. And, you know, when we are a newborn, we're known as a youngster, which is a young star. So to come from the celestial to the terrestrial, we have to come through the Holy Grail, which is the Yoni, which is the womb, and that is the Sphinx of Egypt.
Well, okay. When we come back to the harmonics, which you know does imply math, and you know what you also wrote about, you know, the music of the spheres, but you also give us dimensions of, you know, the grand gallery being 153 feet long, 153 steps. You know, there's that mysterious number showing up. Can you explain what 153 means?
Yeah, of course. Firstly, if you add 1 + 5 + 3 gives you 9, which again is completion in esoteric terms. But what you find when you go into these realms of study and deeper research, you find that the same numbers, the same symbols, the same metaphors will keep repeating and coming up time and time again, no matter what civilization in the world that you're studying. Now, one of these numbers is the number 153. Now, 153 is very biblical, but it also relates to the Great Pyramid. And this is how. So when you look at the Bible, you see that Christ and the disciples caught 153 fish. When you look at the name Mary Magdalene in Greek, in gematria, which is the numerical value of words, it is 153. So straight away we have a Christ and Mary Magdalene connection to 153. In addition to that, as I just spoke about the Yoni, the gateway of the Holy Grail, when you get the Vesica Piscis, which is the two circles that are interlinked, the center of that Vesica Piscis is known as the mandala. Now when you go from left to right, you have a unit of 153. So the Mary Magdalene is really the Yoni, the womb, the Vesica Piscis in geometry, which connects to Christ, because Christ's ministry lasted 153 days. He caught 153 fish. Now, when you get to the Great Pyramid, and just in addition to what I was saying about the gestation period, the entrance of the Great Pyramid represents the navel. Now, the navel is the sustenance of the child. Now, when you sever the umbilical cord, the Egyptians symbolize this by the severing of the shafts of the pyramid. So when they blocked off pyramids, particularly in the Queen's Chamber, they were mimicking the severing of the umbilical cord between mother and child. So when you get to the Great Pyramid itself, the entrance is on the 17th course level. Now that is significant, because when you add all the numbers up from 1 to 17, so you go 1 + 2 + 3 + 4 and so on, it equals 153. Now, when you get inside the Grand Gallery, which represents the ascension towards the Enlightenment, it is 153 feet long, and it has 153 steps. So we also have a lot of Hebrew contributions to that as well, when it relates to Elohim and God and different things. But 153 is a sacred number. It is a sacred number of knowledge that can stretch from Christ to Mary Magdalene, to the Bible, to Hebrew, to the Kabbalah, to the Egyptians, to the Great Pyramid, to the Grand Gallery. And you can connect all of those things by that one singular number, which again also relates to the Holy Grail, the Yoni, the womb.
Wow. Okay, so Stonehenge was built prior to the pyramids at Giza, according to some. But you're saying, like, all this advanced math is really an uninterrupted understanding from, you know, way back in antiquity, and it was totally understood up through the writing of the Old and New Testaments. So that's covering thousands of years. And maybe at some point we lost it, and now we're just rediscovering how advanced the ancients really were.
Yes, of course. I mean, when you look at the Bible, you've mentioned the Bible there. The Bible is now largely is being deciphered by modern day computers. So the Bible itself is a computer code, and when you really really get to the very very pinnacle point, the origin, really, you are talking of binary code, you are talking of binary choice. Now, binary choice is as simple as good over evil, life over death, because binary choice is two numbers, zero and one, which is negative and positive. So the Bible is a computer book that is now only able to be understood truly by modern-day computers. So it is a computer code book. Now, when you look at it at its deepest levels, it is an ascension book. It is telling you how to escape the birth and death cycle of this reality, of this third-dimensional torment. So when you look at the likes of Stonehenge, the Great Pyramids, and all these mathematical genius buildings, and they truly are mathematical genius. Now, when you start looking at who else is a mathematical genius, well, it is the Creator. And the Creator is an ultimate computer. Now, that ultimate computer deals with numbers and binary code. That is why when you look at what is gravity, gravity is binary code. What are subatomic particles? They are binary code. What is consciousness? That is computer binary code. What is the duality of the universe? It is binary code. So we have an ultimate computer, which is what we would call the Creator or the God. And that binary code, that mathematical genius, has been fragmented out across the universe. So my theory of who have put these things there, it is the Creator of the universe through mathematical genius, because when you look at the messages that are contained within these monuments and monoliths, they are mathematical messages, but they are also how to transmute the self back to the promised land. Now, the promised land is enlightenment. So you have a mathematical genius system, and you have a mathematical genius who is the Creator. Now, if you put two and two together, it kind of tells you who has given us the breadcrumbs to get out of here. It is the Creator itself, which is the ultimate computer. And so are we. We are fragments of that ultimate computer. So it is a mathematical genius, because that is the language of the Creator. That is the language of the universe. Everything in the universe adheres to a mathematical sequence or a mathematical code. The creation of humanity is mathematical. When you look at the symbol of the mysteries, the pentagram, that represents man in microcosm. It is the Star of Bethlehem that led the wise men, to their inner Christ, their inner fire, their initiated soul, which is what the Christ is. So it's a mathematical genius system, but it doesn't only pertain to Earth. It pertains to the likes of Mars and different planets. Now, for me, people tell you that it was the civilization from Atlantis that went into Egypt and built the pyramids and everything else. For me, there's evidence to suggest that the monuments and monoliths of Earth were pinpointed from Mars. And when you look at the mathematical longitude and latitude coordinates of these monoliths and monuments, both on Earth and on Mars, they are a mathematical satellite navigation.
Okay. That's a startling statement. So since we're doing a little section on, I don't know, math, but okay, let's look at the face on Mars, the diameter of that layout, what have astronomers been able to photograph of it, and how all that relates to another megalithic site that you write about, Stonehenge. So what is the common connection between Mars and Stonehenge?
Okay, well, there's a common connection between Mars and Stonehenge by, as I was saying, these mathematical coordinates. So when you get the face of Mars and you get the face of the Sphinx of Egypt and you put them on top of each other, they are a mathematical exact match. So we are talking about the same face. So let me just go into a little bit of the mathematics that I'm talking about in this mathematical satellite navigation system, which will then lead me onto Stonehenge. So when you look at the famous face on Mars, it has a grid latitude that, when divided by 2160, which is obviously the amount of time the sun spends in each zodiac sign, you get another mathematical number, which is 97.338688.2, which is both the diameter and the exact location of Stonehenge. So here we have mathematical diameters within the face on Mars that tells you how to find Stonehenge exactly on Earth. Now, the face on Mars is a mile long, which is 5,280 feet, because that is a recognized unit of length used in navigation. Now, when you start taking the Great Pyramid, when you get the Great Pyramid and you use 2 pi squared, you get a grid vector. Again, it's a long mathematical number. It's 9929.184896. Now, that grid vector is the location of the five-sided pyramid of Sidonian City on Mars. So the Great Pyramid is telling you how to find the five-sided pyramid on Mars. Now, when you start getting map overlays and of the Sidonian City on Mars, and you put that over Avebury in Wiltshire in the UK, which is where Stonehenge is, it is an exact map overlay. So you have the Silbury Hill, you have the Altar of Witness, which is the mound of Avebury, and also the mound on Sidon City on Mars. They are an exact match. Now, when you start getting, you can bring other sort of pyramids into this, the Mesoamerican pyramid, the famous one with the flat top, where you have 9 terraces, you have 4 corners, you have 4 staircases, you have 365 steps. Now, that gives you 9 times 4 times 4 times 365, which gives you 52,560. Now, that is the grid longitude of the west of the Great Pyramid, and so on, and so on, and so on. So we have real mathematical correlations here, where the face on Mars, the pyramid on Mars, is telling you how to find sacred monuments on Earth. So, and then when you look at the word Cairo is Al-Kahira. Al-Kahira means the place or the camp of Mars. So we have, for me, we have the surface of Mars that is pinpointing certain locations for earthly monuments to be placed, and it is telling you how to find them. Now, that would suggest that you have a civilization that is either traveling back and forth, or you have 2 civilizations, one on Earth, one on Mars, that are communicating with each other in order to get this mathematical precision. So this is a wondrous, genius mathematical matrix system between Earth and Mars. And again, it goes onto the Moon, it goes onto to Phobos, it goes onto to Venus, it goes onto different planets of the solar system that have monuments that we would associate with Earth, which would associate with Egypt. So it's just a beyond advanced mathematical matrix that's going on here behind the scenes.
Okay, so since we're talking a little bit about astronomy, you also note that there are the shafts that go from the King's Chamber to give a viewer the view of the Orion constellation and a few others. So how do these constellations fit in with understanding astronomy, from the Great Pyramid as well as other, just say Stonehenge or the maybe the Nazca Lines or the Central American site that you just mentioned.
Okay. Yeah. Well, science is observation. Now, the first things or the first bodies that man ever observed were the stars. So the original science is astronomy and astrology. So the likes of biblical prophets and the masters, I mean, master just means measurer of stars. So when you have the prophets and whatever of the ancient past, they were the readers of the celestial narrative, in effect. They understood the movement of the stars. They understood that certain things would happen at certain times of the year, certain things would happen at certain times of the precession of the equinox. And they understood with a precise accuracy that certain things would happen. It's what you know as the biblical end times, which is really describing the end of an age and the destruction that comes with certain transfer. So the ancient people were readers of the stars. Now, when you look how the Egyptians, etc., used to use star charts and star codes, these star codes were taken by the Jewish mystics and they were hidden within the Dead Sea Scrolls. And that was the formulation of what we know as the Hebrew calendar. Now, when I've examined these star codes, and I also know where the Knights Templar hid the Dead Sea Scrolls, but when I've examined these star charts, it tells you the age of the Great Pyramid, and it tells you exactly, I've sort of worked out by the mathematics using these star codes, these star charts, the age of the Great Pyramid. So how do all the shafts and everything correlate to the stars? Well, we are from the stars, and our DNA is programmed elsewhere, and our body is the result of an exploding star in the Orion Nebula. So we are from the stars. It is our home, and that's why everything points towards the sky, towards the heavens. You have the likes of the Belt of Khufu within the Great Pyramid, that there are many reasons and many theories as to what that means. But the Belt of Khufu is symbolic of taking the enlightened souls across the river of the sky, which is the Duet, which is Sirius, Orion, and that region of sky. Now, the Greeks did a similar take, but that was the River Styx and Charon, who took the souls across the River Styx. So we have the Greek and Egyptian equivalent in the Belt of Khufu, which is taking the enlightened souls across the river of the sky. Now, I think that we have it backwards. I think when Egyptologists and other people are looking at the Duet, the afterlife, going from this world to the next, which is the afterlife, I think that's the wrong way around. I think this Earth is the afterlife. I think Earth is what we know as hell. And I think that everything that the Egyptians were doing was to prepare themselves to escape the birth and death cycle, which is the cycle, endless cycle of torment. So I think this is the afterlife. Now, when you look at the Quran and different religious books, the Quran tells you that hell is a place where people who have had information given to them and evidence given to them still don't accept it. That is how the Quran defines hell, which is what we have on Earth. So I think that we have the afterlife and things the wrong way around. Hence, and also we have, or certainly Egyptologists have it the wrong way around, that we enter the Sphinx and go into the pyramids. I think it's the other way around, and we enter from Orion through the pyramids, through the Sphinx. So why do the shafts point to certain parts of the sky? Because we have star energies, and we have the likes of Sirius, which represents Isis, which is really water, and you have the likes of Orion, which represents Osiris. We're talking about the pituitary gland and the pineal gland, hence the Queen's Chamber and the King's Chamber that correlate to that part of the human brain, the seat of consciousness, in effect. So the stars are important because they are energetic. Now, when you look at the Alpi Indian prophecy, the red and blue star, Kuchina, prophecy of the Alpi Indians, Sirius A and our sun are in a binary. Now, due to what is known as the Doppler effect, when Sirius A is moving away, it is red. When it is moving towards us, it is blue. Now, when it is coming back towards us blue, it is flooding the earth and the atmosphere with enlightenment. Now, that is the red and blue star Kachina prophecy of the Alpi Indians is talking about the effect, the enlightening effect of Sirius, which is Isis in Egypt. So the stars are extremely important. Star in Egyptian is Sabah, which means gateway. And then you can take that back to us saying about the 64 keys of Enoch and Stonehenge being portals to the stars. So we have a real correlation between the earth, the cosmos, and beyond. And when we look at Horus, the sun on the horizon, Horus risen, the word Horus also gives us horoscope. But when we look at the horizon, those who are on a journey of discovery, those who are igniting the God within themselves, those who are going into the unknown, into the unseen, are the Elohim. So anybody who is on this path of self-discovery, going beyond, you know, the limitations, going beyond what you cannot see, is what is known in the Bible as the Elohim. So we have all of these hints and all of these tips given to us through the sands of time to the present day, which is now beginning to re-emerge at quite a significant rate because people are now becoming ready for the re-emergence of this sacred knowledge.
Yeah. And that reminds me of how you begin one of your chapter on Egypt with, you know, all this information is presented, the Egyptian engineering and advanced culture of Africa. You say that Egypt was the pinnacle of civilization, and it was basically a prerequisite for Jesus, and you know all what you said about the internal aspects of the pyramid, and this represents the pineal gland and those kind of topics. Giving us a look at our internal makeup, who we are. Can you explain a little bit more about what the importance of Egypt's standing in the world and why it had to be a prerequisite for Jesus?
When you look at other lands of enlightened teachings, you know, you can go to Greece when, you know, Athena means wisdom. You have Crete, which means creation. A lot of the Greek philosophers spent many decades as initiates of the Egyptian mystery schools. When you look at Hebrew, when you look at the Kabbalah, which is mystic Judaism, it was taken from Egyptian theology, from Egyptian knowledge. So a lot of the things that we see in society today, a lot of the things that were taken from Egypt and slightly changed, but it seems to come from the epicenter of wisdom and the epicenter of enlightenment, which was ancient Egypt, and that has just been taken by different civilizations and used in a different way. So when you look at Noah's Ark being the Great Pyramid, when you look at the astronomy, when you look through the eyes of the Sphinx and what the Sphinx is actually looking at on the horizon, you start to get a sense that certain star movements, for argument's sake, Virgo, which is the Virgin, on the 11th of September, Virgo rises above the horizon with the sun in her abdomen. So that is really, Virgo is the Virgin, that is the Virgin birth. Now that is the 11th of September, not the 25th of December, as we are taught. The 25th of December date is the Church of Rome. It's not the birth of Christ. It's what the Church of Rome have manipulated and deceived people into believing. But when you look at the Great Pyramid, it is the chief cornerstone. It is the cornerstone that the builders rejected, which is Christ. When you look at what Christ really is, Christ is each and every one of us. Christ is an initiated, enlightened soul. It is a divine mind. Now, when you look at the map overlay of the human head over the Great Pyramid, it represents the divine mind. So the Christ is the initiated soul. Now, when you start looking at the life of Christ, it is all about initiations or stage of initiations. So the first elemental initiation is birth itself. So when you are born on Earth, Earth is an element. It is the first initiation. You are born into this. Now, when you start looking at the likes of the cross is really the fourth initiation, which is the surrendering of the lower self. Now, when you start looking at a crucifixion and when you start looking at Golgotha, Golgotha means the place of skulls. Now, the skull is where we get the light to become enlightened. It is where we have the pineal gland, the pituitary gland, the thalamus. All of these centers of consciousness are within the skull. And that is Golgotha, the place of Golgotha, the place of skulls, where you are crucified, which is initiation. And you're going through the different levels of initiation to reach this divine mind, this enlightened soul, which is what Christ is. Now, you can take that to the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant is the sarcophagus of the Great Pyramid, because when the Bible gives you the diameters and the dimensions, they are the exact same dimensions of the sarcophagus of the Great Pyramid. Now, the King's Chamber also represents enlightenment of the mind, the pineal gland. So when you look at what is the communication system between the Earth and the cosmos, it is the mind, it is the brain, it is the divine enlightened mind. And that is also why we have the sarcophagus in the King's Chamber. You can look at different stories of the Bible. You can look at Moses. What is the true meaning of the Exodus, the parting of the sea, the parting of the Red Sea? In Gnosticism, in the secret circles of wisdom, the path of least resistance is known as the open sea. Now, that is, you go from the root chakra, which is your lower self, which in the Kabbalah system is Egypt, captivity, and you go through the path of least resistance as the serpent of fire goes up Jacob's ladder, which is your spine, up the 33 segments of the spine, which is Jacob's ladder. 33 also gives you the age that Christ died. It also gives you the degrees of masonry. It gives 33 vertebrae of the spine, and the 33rd vertebrae is known as Atlas, which then gives you the island of Atlantis. We see that the Exodus of Moses is really the opening of the chakras and the Kundalini serpent fire going through each of the chakras up the spine until it gets to the place of enlightenment, which is Golgotha, which is the place of skulls. When you bring the seven chakras into this, you can then bring Noah into it, because Noah relates to seven, and it is the opening of the chakras. All of the biblical stories are talking about enlightenment. They are talking about a resurrection, a rebirth of self, and that is what the Christ is, and that is what Moses is, that is what Noah is, So we have all of these correlations between what the Egyptian pyramid is telling us, what the Bible is telling us, what the Hebrews are telling us, which is really taken from the Egyptian theology, and it all amounts to the Giza Plateau.
And you know, the treasure of heaven is the mind from Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. So, you know, all, what you're saying is, you know, just the New Testament summation of what the Egyptians already knew. And you see Egypt's influence thousands of years later on the writing of the New Testament.
The Egyptian influence goes all the way through to the modern day. You know, all the secret societies, all of these people now are still using Egyptian symbols. They are using Egyptian theology. Even the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry is really the principles of Egypt. So we have, you know, it comes all the way. Somebody once said to me that, okay, if Egypt was such a pinnacle epicenter, why did it disappear? And I said, it didn't disappear. It's just been hidden. And it's come all the way through to the modern day. To everything, really everything within society can go back to the Enlightenment of Egypt. And so it never went away. And I don't believe the Egyptians built the pyramids. I believe they were taught how to use them. I believe the creator of the universe created the Great Pyramid and the Giza Plateau as a, should we say, a means to develop, a means to escape. And then when you get from Egypt and then you go to Sidonian City on Mars, and as I say, the face on Mars is the same as the face of the Sphinx, and so on and so on. You have the five-sided pyramid of Sidonia. You have the eye of the face of Mars looking in the direct center of the five-sided pentagram of Sidonia. That means that it's actually referring to a sixth sense, which is pure consciousness. We have these breadcrumbs that transcend our planet, but they include our planet. And each of these different monuments are a different section of an orchestra of amplified sound. They were transmuting through piezoelectric energy. They were transmuting magnetic energy into electric energy, and they were transmuting themselves through portals, through sound. So they were traveling the stars. They were coming back. They were, should we say, the Star Walkers, which was changed to Skywalker in the Star Wars movies.
Mm-hmm.
So they, everything you look at, the principle of Egypt, and yes, of course, it had its dark times, but the original principle of this land was a matriarchal system. Now, the matriarchal system is the goddess, is the womb, is the menstrual blood, which is the wine of the chalice of the Last Supper. The word supper comes from soup. The primordial soup is menstrual blood. So when you have Holy Communion, it is symbolic of drinking menstrual blood and semen, the elixir of life, the fluids of life. And this comes from the goddess principle of the menstrual blood, the womb, the goddess, you know, the all of these different things which correlate to the magnificence of the Giza Plateau, as well as the Bible, as well as all of these different monuments around the world.
Okay, and you do go into other Egyptian artwork, symbology, like the scarab is it represents both hemispheres of the brain. I mean, you have several examples in Alchemy of the Gods. It's, you know, just you really do put in perspective how Egyptian symbology really meant something very deep, and you know, we're just rediscovering it now.
It's extremely deep, and we were it was timed to be re-emerged now. So yes, you have the scarab beetle, you have the hieroglyphs, which most people look at and think that it's a visual thing. It is a visual thing, but the main effect that you get from hieroglyphs is when you touch them, because when you touch hieroglyphs, that is messages for the soul inside the hieroglyphs. So the thing that you should be doing with them is touching them. When you look at every stone inside the Great Pyramid, being an octave, being a note, being a chord, being a key, when I did a mathematical formula for the speed of reality, there was this extremely long number that kept appearing in my formula, in my calculation. Little did I realize at the time, but I did several weeks later, that this exact long number sequence is one of the chords within the Great Pyramid, the harmonics of the Great Pyramid. So that suggests to me that they also knew the speed of reality and the formula that, you know, many, many thousands of years later I've come up with. But they knew all about advanced sound. You know, when we look at the phenomena of the elongated skulls around the world, Malta, mm-hmm. Peru, Russia, Stonehenge, Egypt, they were using sound techniques when the child was inside the womb, which was altering the shape of the skull. So sound, you know, going back to the keys of Enoch, going back to the tongue being a key, going back to the tonal rules of harmonics that were opening stargates, opening gateways at the correct frequency. All of these monuments, in a sense of a planisphere, represent different planets. Stonehenge represents Saturn. Many of the crop circles are being transmitted. Sound is being transmitted from the rings of Saturn, which is coming all the way to Earth within hour and a half. It's being picked up by the crystalline aerial that is Stonehenge, and the sound waves are then being transformed into a pictorial geometric shape, which is what crop circles largely are. And the reason that most of them are around Stonehenge is because Stonehenge is the aerial that is receiving them. Now, when you look at, you know, at certain frequencies, create certain patterns. When you see a snowflake, the beauty geometry of a snowflake, that is really the sound of the atmosphere crystallized and frozen. So sound is a wonderful thing, and it goes all the way through the harmonics of the pyramids, the speed of reality, all the way through to Stonehenge, all across the ley lines. They are connected to the stars, which are also connected by light lines, which are also ley lines. And we have this wonderful grid system of enlightenment that, when activated, will change the face of reality.
Okay. Amazing. You know, Michael, we don't want to give away your entire presentation, but you know, I kind of have a feeling that Barbara's going to steal you from my stable of guests, and you can continue.
Yeah, I already
next time she has an open. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And so
consider him stolen.
Yeah.
Consider the theft accepted.
Okay.
Huh?
You know, but you know. There's something wrong with a police officer being a willing participant in thievery. Well, you can explain that to Barbara. So I don't want to sully my soil my reputation by getting involved in that deal. But I have an appointment to get to, and you know, it's approaching your dinner time as well. But Michael, how about we, you know, stop about here, and if people want to learn more about you, they can attend the Global Pyramid Network conference. Can you give the listeners any more information about, you know, where to get your books and your website and anything else that you want to plug?
Yeah, really, my website is just Michael-Feely, F-E-E-L-E-Y. On there is one-on-one Skype calls. There's different things. There's free blogs on there. There's books on there. There's e-books on there. There's events pages on there. I have a YouTube channel and Facebook channel, which is under my name, so it should be relatively easy to find. And really, everything starts at my website and spreads out. So if somebody, you know, there's a facility on there for people to get in touch with me, and people are at a greater and greater number. But every single one, you know, I will reply to every single message, but there's many different ways in which people can get hold of me.
Okay. That could have almost been a caller right there for you to find out how to get hold of you, but I think they're more concerned about extending my car warranty, but I hung up on her. So, Michael, you'll be back. Was it March 14th? Now, I got a message, and we will keep talking about this. All of your fantastic information at other times on Nightlight. And I just want to thank you for being a guest, and I know you'll be back, and we look forward to hearing more about your research. This is this has been a terrific hour, and I just want to thank you. Thank you, Barbara, for producing the show, and we will I'll see everyone next Tuesday night. So and we have AA, the Ancient Artifact Preservation Society conference to talk about next week, which might be some overlapping information. So this was just really a terrific show, and thank you again, Michael, and we'll see everyone next week.
Thank you, Balf. It's all.